Welcome to this episode of MC Forward, a podcast that focuses on Montgomery College individuals who are leading from where they are. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Mills. Joining me today is Dr. Kevin Long, Deputy Chief of Staff for Planning and Policy, and most recently, Convener and Project Manager of the Return to Campus Advisory Team. Kevin, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Before we start talking about leadership, knowing this is a podcast and there's no video, I want our listeners to realize that our pandemic hairstyles are going in a different direction. Yours is growing and mine is left. I got tired of mine and just got it cut, and yours is going the different way.
It's funny because I was going to, right before the return date, I was going to get it cut short again. But everybody keeps saying no, and my wife is like, no, so I'm going to let it grow for as long as I can bear it.
Good for you. I wish I could do it without mine getting out of control, but just doesn't happen.
Hasn't been this long since high school.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about leadership. What are some of the best traits a leader can have?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. I think one of the most important traits a leader can have is authenticity. Sincerity. People will not follow you if they don't believe that you believe. So if they think you're trying to sell them a line or just trying to roll them over, trick them into doing something, they're not going to follow along. So I think that authenticity, people have to believe that, you know, what you say is what you mean, it's true, you're being direct, you're being honest, you're being forthright with them. And I think along with that is a good sense of collaboration. I think good leaders are good collaborators. No one does this work alone. I always used to tell my students when I would give them a group project and they complained about it because they didn't like to work in group projects. And I'd have to remind them that when you get out in the world, out in the working world, so there would be very few instances where you're going to be working alone. And so you have to learn how to work with others. You have to learn how to collaborate, share the load, cheer each other on, give constructive feedback, pull your weight. So I think, you know, that authenticity, I think that sense of collaboration is critical. I think a sense of empathy and compassion is also important, particularly as we've gone through this whole pandemic. And one of the mantras that I've heard repeated over and over, and I've said it myself, is that, you know, we need to treat each other with a little bit of grace and compassion and patience, because we're all going through this together. This is our first time through it. And that translates into any kind of work project that you're on or you're leading, because everyone is in it together. They're on it for a reason. Everyone's striving to do a good outcome of the project. And so I think having that compassion, that grace, that patience, is also, you know, highly critical. It directly ties into authenticity. So when people think you genuinely care, when people think you genuinely want their input, that when you ask what they think, that you sincerely want to hear what they think, I think that goes a long way. So I would say, you know, for me, that's been the top three attributes of a good leader, at least the ones that I've experienced.
And does that collaboration, that authenticity, that empathy also lead itself to giving credit to the team and not taking credit for yourself?
Absolutely.
Is that trait of a good leader?
Yeah. The ultimate end goal of any project is a collaborative outcome, a success for the entire team, a success for the college, not an individual success. You know, you shouldn't enter into these things just so you can put another line on your resume. Or something else on your CV. So it really is about lifting everyone up and everybody crossing the finish line and everyone getting the kudos, not just one person, but the team. That's why I've always loved our team effort awards here at the college. It's always been one of my favorite awards to get. And I have a lot of them just because I like working in teams. And I think it's great to recognize when a team does well.
Okay, great. A worst trait. Of a leader?
Worst trait of a leader? I would say non-responsiveness. If I had any pet peeve at all, it would be, you know, those who are leading something, people who look to them for guidance, for advice, for a discussion if they're non-responsive. So I think being present, being there is an absolute critical. And if you can't do that, then you're not being a good leader.
When did you realize leadership was something that you wanted to get into, that you were good at?
That's a really good question. I'm trying to think back. Probably back in college, I would say undergrad was something, because I was new college, away from home, and I wanted to meet people and get involved in groups and activities. I thought was really fun, and I always liked the collaborative nature of doing things together, of planning, of talking things out, of debating what to do, debating this approach, that approach, and then kind of coming to consensus, not necessarily getting what you want, but getting the end result that you want, not the how you wanted to do it. So I think probably back in college is where I learned, and early on I did the whole college experience, joined the fraternity, did all of that. And ended up being president of the fraternity, and then my senior year president of the Interfraternity Council. So it was something that I just kind of gravitated toward because I enjoyed working with people. I just enjoyed working with them.
And certainly in your role as Deputy Chief of Staff for Planning and Policy, a lot of leadership there, a lot of collaboration is needed in that role. How do you find the leadership challenges in your role as Deputy Chief of Staff for Planning and Policy?
I think the leadership challenges are in this role are the same as they would be in almost any other role. It's finding that balance. No one does just one thing. We're all involved in multiple things. And so it's really finding that balance and being able to give the proper attention, the proper presence to everything that's going on. And you may be voluntold to do something that you don't really want, but you have to have the same level of enthusiasm that you would for something that you really wanted to do, because people are depending on the work getting done. And so if you're lackadaisical, if you're blasé about it, then the team's going to be blasé about it, lackadaisical about it, and you're going to wind up with something that's substandard, that doesn't really meet the qualifications. And people aren't happy. Nobody wants to go to an unproductive meeting. And nobody wants to be involved in an unproductive project. People like to see forward momentum. And people like to realize that what they're investing their time and their energy and their passions in has meaning. And it's going to have an outcome that's going to benefit people. So, that's probably the challenge, is finding that balance between different projects. Because, my plate's always full. And it's getting fuller by the day. So it's really finding that balance to make sure that I can provide my time and my attention, my energy, not only to the project itself, the process, but to the people that are involved too, making sure that they're constantly involved, constantly updated, keeping that energy level up so that it just doesn't drag down, because that can easily happen.
One of my pet peeves from a leadership standpoint, you touched on it, is preparedness.
Yes.
People coming and not being prepared.
Yes.
And not necessarily here at the college, but in previous experiences that I've had, they want you to follow that. And yet they don't have a roadmap of where they're going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the worst feeling in the world, walk into a meeting or even to a class and ask, did everybody read or review the stuff? And people are like, nah, I just didn't have time to do it. That just stops everything dead in its tracks. So like you said, that being unprepared to go in. So that's definitely a pet peeve of mine as well. I think that's really tied to responsiveness as well, is being present in the project and being there when you need to be there.
Let's shift gears for a minute to your role as leader convener of the Return to Campus Advisory Team.
Yes.
You were tagged for that role by Dr. Pollard before she left, and obviously she saw the traits that you have as a leader. What do you bring to that table that may be different because you're not a COVID expert, right? You're not a scientist per se. So how do you juggle the leadership responsibilities of that, knowing that you're in an environment that really isn't your area of expertise?
Well, what I bring to it is, a strong focus on the end result, a focus on the goal. And what I bring with that is the humility to know that I don't have the answers. I'm blessed, the RTCAT, we're blessed with just a phenomenal team of experts from across the college in different roles that have different expertise, levels of expertise and knowledge, that I don't have. And this is the kind of project that no one person can do. There's no way a single individual could develop the entire apparatus for implementation of a return to campus after a pandemic. You need everyone at the table with the expertise. So, that what I bring to it is, I know what the end result is, and I know what I don't know. And I don't pretend that I know what I don't know. And so I rely on them to actually lead the project along. I'm the convener. I convene the group. I send out the meeting requests, I do notes, I pose the questions, but we all do the work collaboratively. It's a group of really good college leaders, leading together on one project.
But I was in a recent meeting with you, and I think you're being a little humble. You came very prepared. You knew all the facts that you needed to know. It blew me away. So it goes back to that preparedness that we talked about, right? That responsiveness.
And if you don't know, it's incumbent upon you to find out. This whole notion of self-education, of self-growth, of really doing your own due diligence and bringing yourself up to speed and not leaning on other people to always have the answer. I don't always have the answer, but I'm prepared enough to where I can evaluate an answer that's given. I think that's part of what it is having a good baseline knowledge, an awareness of whatever the project is, and relying on the expertise of others that they're not there just because they're there to fill a seat. They're there because they bring a certain perspective, a critical point of view, and a certain level of expertise and knowledge that complements everyone. So I know what, like I said, I know what I don't know, and I'm not an expert in public health. But it's incumbent upon me as the convener of this group to bring myself up to speed, because I can't identify key projects or key issues that we need follow up on or more information on if I'm completely unaware of what it entails.
Did you think you'd be in this position 18, 20 months ago?
No, I did not. No, I did not. And it's been a challenge. It has really been an almost all-consuming kind of project. And it's one of those things that it's an additive on your plate, but you don't get to move any other plates off the table. So you've got to still manage all of everything else that's in your purview. You still got to manage all of that. But knowing the importance and the critical nature of this, it tends to take precedence, and it tends to take a lot more time and a lot more energy. But again, if you surround, I'm blessed to be surrounded by people who know this stuff, who live this stuff, and bringing Chevelle in as our new public health director has been a huge benefit, because we have that absolute critical perspective on the team. But we had all these other perspectives, but from that public health, that actual in the trenches public health work, we had people who had done some pieces of it and had some knowledge of it, but having that expert at the table has been critical, and it really helps lessen the load. It makes it more of a fun project. It makes it more of a doable project. When you can actually start to see things develop, and you know that you can get there now because you've got the right people at the table.
Are you looking forward to the end game?
Yes. I am looking very forward to going back to my normal day-to-day labor market planning and policy stuff and the other duties as assigned, which as you well know, tends to take up a lot of extra time sometimes.
Absolutely. I want to shift gears to your time in the classroom. I know you've taught for a number of years. The leadership in a classroom, is it different than the leadership outside of the classroom?
But it's vastly different because the outcomes are different. What you're aiming for is different. Outside the classroom, you're really talking about peers, colleagues working together toward a common goal, toward a common institutional goal. In the classroom, you're pretty much a lone actor, trying to facilitate the learning toward these outcomes of the class, which contribute hopefully to the outcomes of the program. So the leadership style is a little different, but where the similarities lie is providing that space for people to learn, for people to come up with ideas, for people to be creative, for people to get up to speed and master something and have the confidence to move forward and try something new, something more advanced. And so I think that's where the similarities lie between external leadership and in the classroom leadership. And we typically, I was an adjunct faculty. I was a staff faculty for a long time. But again, it's the same thing. You're pretty much, on your own in the classroom with students who are there to learn something. They're not necessarily your colleagues. They're not your peers. There's a power dynamic differential in the classroom that doesn't often exist outside of the classroom. It does sometimes. But inside the classroom, there's a very defined power differential. And I think it's really making students comfortable enough to where they're not intimidated by that power differential, where they're not turned off by that power differential, where it doesn't go to my head that I know everything about the subject matter, and it doesn't go to the student's head that they know nothing about the subject matter, because often they know a lot. And often I don't know as much as I can pretend to know in front of a class of students. But I think it's really, in the classroom, like external, you're all taking that journey together. And it's all about making that journey as valuable and as rewarding and as consequential as you possibly can make it.
You've got me thinking about this idea of, in both in the classroom and outside the classroom, of leaders allowing people to challenge them.
Yes, yes.
And I think, at least from my experience in the classroom and certainly outside, that is a culture that you want to foster within professional context.
Yes, absolutely you do.
But being able to provide that space where someone can say, look, I hear what you're saying, but I don't necessarily agree with what you're saying, and here's why, and right. Let's take this path.
And what you're talking about is really, cultivating that a culture of inquiry. Is like, if a student says that they disagree with something in the book or something I said, I don't just take it, okay, you disagree, fine, let's move on. You want to explore why, you want to inquire. Well, why don't you believe it? What aspect of it did not resonate with you? What other perspectives have you heard that you found more valuable and why? So it really is, that level of inquiry. And you find that outside of the classroom too, when someone challenges, the way that you're going about doing a project, is that, you don't take that as a challenge to authority, a challenge to leadership. You take that as a moment of inquiry to find out, okay, what is this person thinking? What perspective are they bringing that I might be missing? In terms of how the work gets done, sometimes the end result. So it's really about being willing to ask the questions and also being willing to have people ask you questions. So it's getting that two-way dialogue of sharing an inquiry back and forth, either in the classroom or on a project. I think really makes the experience a lot more valuable, and I think you learn more that way.
Do good leaders have an ego?
To a degree, and I don't want to say ego in the bad sense, but I think a self-awareness. I think a good leader should be self-aware. They should be aware of their limitations, their expertise, what they can, what they can't do, So I think, you know, you can call that ego, but it's also self-awareness. You know, I don't think they should have that attitudinal ego of, you know, I'm better than you. I have a degree. Therefore, the presence of letters after my name confers certain privileges on me. Same thing with a title. You know, a title after someone's name is simply a title. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't confer special privileges or special knowledge on them. It's a recognition of some knowledge and experience and abilities that they have or that they've developed over time. That's why people's job titles change. You know, you either advance or you go backwards. And so that's all part of how you as an individual can, you know, take in, absorb, synthesize, interact with that kind of, with those different levels of knowledge and awareness. So yeah, I think ego, yeah, not, I think self-awareness, but not that, you know, egotistical piece.
If there's any, ever any indication that titles and letters after your name don't mean a thing, just ask family members.
Right? Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. They don't care. Yeah. No one in my family calls me doctor. They don't care.
When I first got my doctoral degree, I sat down, my kids, we were having dinner, and I said, I just want you to say one time, just one time, you know, just say, doctor, can you pass the ketchup? And I'm still waiting. And that was some 15, 16 years ago.
My mom, bless her heart, will still send me holiday cards addressed to doctor with doctor on it. So it's always great to receive that. So she does that for my wife too, because she has a PhD. So it's always like, you know, the doctor's long, which is, I always find it just tickles me whenever I get those.
Well, Kevin, thank you for taking time out of your busy day. You have a lot on your plate. You're trying to get us back to campus safely. And so I appreciate your taking time out. It's been a pleasure for me.
My pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity. And like I said, before the podcast, I absolutely love this idea of doing these. I think that's just a remarkably impressive idea and just a really creative way of kind of, you know, getting people involved and getting, you know, certain types of knowledge and experience out there in the world.
If you know someone who you think would be a great fit for this podcast, have them reach out to me at michael.mills@montgomerycollege.edu. Meanwhile, keep moving MC forward.